what does it take to travel besides Syria nowadays? For generations and generations and generations, they used a ship or a horse or a wagon. They used a map. Finally, they got to a compass. That's really kind of what it takes, isn't it, to travel? In general, you need something to write on, something to ride on and be in or be a part of, a ship. You need a map. You need to know where you're going. Remember where Thomas, when Thomas asked Jesus, well, actually, he said to Jesus, Jesus, we don't know where you're going. And what did Jesus say? I am the way and the truth and the life. We need a compass. We need an internal or external thing that will tell us which way to go. And if you think about this, we are in a church. And we have a map. It's got lots of pages. It takes some deciphering. It takes some understanding, some work. And we have a compass. The Spirit in us tells us which way to go. Isn't He the guide? Isn't He our counselor promised by the Lord? He is our guide. He is our compass. 1 Peter 1:1. I love this because after his sermon in Acts, when the church started, his first epistle was to the exiles. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles. That word in the Greek is exiles or sojourners or travelers, foreigners. The English like to put pilgrims. I love that. That word pilgrim kind of encompasses, if we're not too caught up with the dress and the big hat and the turkey gun, we're kind of caught up with the whole idea of newborn babes, kind of. Newcomers. Not really knowing where we're at or where we're going. We know where we've been. We know where we've come. And we know why we've come to the new place, right? That's you and me. We know why we're here. Why are you in the church decades and decades after coming to Christ? Why are you still here? With all the stuff that you could be doing, we could be burying our head in the sand and sulking over what is happening in our nation and just kind of running from the whole thing. Or we could come here and get in the boat, the church, and we can study the map. And we can watch or listen to the compass. Because we have two citizenships. There's two cities. There's the heavenly city, and there's the earthly city. Even the Lord has a heavenly city and an earthly city. He has heaven, and He has Zion. But you can't have Zion without the heavenly Zion. They're connected. But we're not in Zion. We're in Yankton, South Dakota. I think we're the only named city Yankton, aren't we? Named after the Yankton Sioux, I think. That's the case. You're a citizen of Yankton? You're a citizen of South Dakota? 1 Peter 2, he goes on to the next chapter. Beloved, I urge you then, I put the then in, if you're exiles and pilgrims, which I've mentioned in chapter 1, in chapter 2 I'll say you're sojourners and you're exiles, pilgrims. There we go again. The English translations, a few of them, put pilgrims in there. To abstain from passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul. So, if we're foreigners traveling through a weary land, we're going to come into some territory like the Moabites. and let us pass through your territory. No, you're not coming in here. Remember, that's what the Lord was upset about with them. No, you're going around. The Lord held it against them. They were cousins, you know, of Isaac and Jacob. Go around. You don't belong here. We would say, you're right. We just want to pass through. Can we just pass through your land? Because that's all we're doing. No, because if you pass through our land, you're going to eat up our resources. And you know, you're not a part of us. You're a strange people, aren't you? You believe in what? Some kind of strange resurrection of the dead? The one man who only had 12, really 11 followers, died on the cross and saved the world? You guys are crazy. You guys don't know what you're talking about. You guys have a strange, strange doctrine. The people of Athens would think of Paul and others. You guys are strange. That's a strange boat you're in there, Noah. That's a strange boat you're in there, church. What are you using for a map or a compass, and where are you going? In Psalm 119:19, I'm a stranger. I am not here in my home. This is a little bit of a liberal translation, but I love it. I'm a stranger. I'm not in my home. But as a pilgrim, you found a pilgrim in the Old Testament? Yeah, because I identify with David there. Don't you identify with David? Do you identify with these words? I'm a stranger. I'm not in my home. I'm a pilgrim traveling homeward in a strange land. I love this. You know what this does? Sets you apart. Makes you different. This is why the world doesn't like us. This is why they don't understand. That's okay. Don't take it personal. They persecuted Jesus. Guess what? They're going to persecute you. Now, I've been here for 61 years at a camp. 61 and a half. I haven't really been persecuted too much. A little bit on Facebook. You don't believe that stuff. I haven't seen him in my door or at my door. I haven't seen him try to do those kinds of weird things. But there's a whole history of that kind of stuff happening. And by the way, my bones are still dying and I am suffering. Whether somebody's knocking on my head or the pain is just knocking at my joints. Your commandments, therefore, he says this, let me read the whole thing. A stranger, I'm not here as in my home, but as a pilgrim traveling homeward in a strange land. Your commandments are my chief support, my guide in my pilgrimage. I think we just should stop the sermon and everybody raise their hands and praise the Lord. Isn't that great? Here's your compass. Here's your guide. The Holy Spirit's with you, your map, your guide. That's what we need, and that's what we have, and that's what David had, and he made it. With much turmoil, he made it. 1 Chronicles 29:15, we are here for only a moment. Think back now when you were 25. You think back when you were 15. You little ones think back when you were 3. That's just a vapor away. That's just like, where was that? Where was that? When was that? That was like yesterday. We are only here for a moment. Visitors and strangers in the land as our ancestors were before us. Our days on earth are like a passing shadow, gone so soon without a trace. Grant to my son, David said, grant to my son a whole heart that he may keep your commandments. Okay, so I kept them. Here you go. Pass the map on, right? Because people are coming after you unless the rapture comes. People are coming. And there's only one map. There's only one spirit. We were born and baptized into how many spirits? One. The same spirit. It's like we can't get off track. It's like we're all in the same boat, and some may die, but they're not lost. If you're in the boat, there's no losing anybody. Psalm 39, Jesus called it sleep, by the way. Psalm 39, 12, hear my prayer, O Lord. I love this psalm. It's a great psalm. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Listen to my cries for help. Don't ignore my tears. Don't be idly by while you look at traitors. We're going back to Habakkuk, aren't we? Have mercy in your wrath. Don't ignore my tears, for I am your guest. He's the captain of the ship. And we're travelers. A pilgrim, he says, passing through. As my ancestors were before me, I said, and this is the way he starts the psalm, I said, I will guard my ways that I may not sin against you. I'll follow the map. It's like Joshua going into a land. What did the Lord tell Joshua when he was taking his people into the land? He didn't say you're in a boat, but basically you're in a boat, right? You're in a boat, you're coming across the Jordan, and then he says to Joshua, don't turn to the left or don't turn to the right. He says a couple times. The ark is right in front of you, your compass. Don't be turning. The pilgrims or the pilgrimage really is from Plymouth to Plymouth. It starts from Plymouth, England, because that's where they left. And it's going to the New Plymouth in the colonies. They went, it took 66 days. Now, what's really interesting to me is there's 66 books in the Bible. That's coincidence, right? I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. I tend not to think so. Because every day is numbered, right? Every moment. If they would have said, you're going to be on the ship for 66 days, would you have gotten on? In November? Actually, they got in September. They went through November. Wow! You know, they were late. They were late. They were late. Watch what happens here. This is really interesting. Now, this is not their timeline. What I'm going to show you is a timeline of what was happening during that time. Because if you just want to believe that God is provident over your soul and over this little body of believers and over you who are apart, that can't be with us, if you want to just... Let's just bear with this a little bit, okay? Watch this happen. Watch what happens. There's a timeline. At 1400, 1500, and 1600. Remember, this is not their timeline going across. It only took 66 days to go across. But we're going to go back to, let's begin at the beginning. Down on the bottom. At 600 AD. When the church said, you can't have a Bible. And if you do have a Bible, it better be in Latin. Anybody here speak Latin? I've seen some Latin words. We had to learn a few and look at them. And I just kind of like, okay. I'm going to stick with English. I might look at the Greek and the Hebrew once in a while, but that's enough. You can have Latin. After 600... They had to speak, I mean, they had to read the Bible in Latin. The Latin Bible was the only legal Bible. Okay? There was others around, but they were very few. Remember, everything at that point was handwritten. Okay? In 1384, near 1400, John Wycliffe was really, they call him the son, I can't remember, the father of the Reformation, or one of them anyway. Remember, his time, they call his time the dawn of the Reformation, the dawn. Because at that point, some people started standing up and said, I think enough's enough. Don't you? You can't tell me how to worship. You can't tell me I only read the Bible in Latin when it wasn't even written in Latin in the first place. The church had their man, one man, take it out of the Greek and the Hebrew and put it in Latin. I don't need your translation. So John Wycliffe and some others, but John Wycliffe said that's kind of enough. And so he handwrote the whole Bible. And at that time, remember, they had the Apocrypha in there as well. He handwrote the whole Bible. And then he died. Jan Hus took up where he was, where John Wycliffe was, and he stood up to the church. Jan Hus, stood up against the church, and he was killed. He was martyred just after 1400, 1417. And when the church got done with him, you know what they did? Well, we know who started this. And they went back and dug up John Wycliffe's bones and burned them. Now, first of all, does that make any kind of sense to you? Let's kill him twice. Isn't that amazing? The vitriol hatred of people who love the Bible. That is absolutely astonishing to me. This was happening at the 1400 point, about 800 years after we're done with the Latin. We got to go. We got to move forward. So then, right then, right about 1450, the Gutenberg Press came out. Now watch God's timing here. Watch what happens. The Gutenberg Press came out, and being part of the church, they said, well, let's print the first Bible. And so the green one was written by John Wycliffe, handwriting, English. The pink one is the first printed Bible, the Gutenberg Bible, in Latin. Okay, was it done in Latin? And then you had like a German Bible. Martin Luther did one, and some others did, you know, there was a Dutch Bible in there and some other Bibles in there. So those pink ones are foreign languages to you. Latin, German, whatever. Okay? But look at all the English Bibles. They just, boom. At about 1500 to 1600, the English language, boom. And the big one at the end, the green one on the left, the big long one, is the most famous Bible of all, the King James Bible. 1611. There wasn't another Bible printed, as far as I could tell, or an English Bible anyway, until 1782. So, you see God's timeline there? That's God's providence. That's God's timeline. What does that have to do with the pilgrims? I'm getting there. We're getting there. In 1517, Martin Luther, this red star on the right, nailed his 95 theses on the door at Wittenberg. Remember that. Just remember the Reformation. Now, it had already started. But Martin Luther was like, it's all about grace. It is nothing about, the church is not going to tell me how to worship or how to read my Bible or whether I can or can't. And you just got to love him for that. And we always want to stipulate that he and Calvin did not finish the Reformation. It's about to be finished. It's being finished. But he started it. He was a son of it. And then John Calvin, in 1532, he stood up against the Roman Church in Geneva. And he wrote his dissertations and books upon books upon books. Oh, that's heresy. We're not even not speaking Latin anymore. We're writing books about the Bible. That's amazing stuff. Then in 1534, so right in the middle there, 1534, King Henry VIII broke from Rome and he established the Anglican Church in England. Okay, so now the church is really losing. Now they lost the king, sort of. Because the king goes and he starts a church, the Anglican Church. So now you got the Catholic Church and the protesters, the Protestants, that's you and me. They protested, but they're still small in numbers, and they've got a huge wave of enemy against them. But the king finally said, I've had it with them too. Of course, he did it for other reasons we won't get into, you know. So the King Henry was not a good guy. But he stands up and he says, we're going to have our own church, and you can, you know, we'll have our own popes and all that other stuff. So he started the Anglican Church, and the Anglican Church became a real problem as well. So about 40 years after that, some separatists finally said, we're done. I mean, this we've had it. We're going to start our own church. This is where the Puritans and the Pilgrims come in, right before 1600. Okay? God's timing. Right before 1600. When I think they're getting the Bibles in their hands. You mean Gutenberg, he printed a Bible for us and we could like start our own church? Can you imagine the Anglicans and the Catholics, the popes and the bishops saying, whoa, we just lost a whole bunch of sheep. And so at 1604, right at 1600, 1604, the Puritans made a proposal to the church, an official proposal for changes, and they were denied. And that was the last straw. That was it for the Puritans. So they called themselves the Scrooby Separatists. They rose up, they tried to have a church, and then that wasn't working, so they moved to Holland, and they among the Dutch, and the Dutch were becoming pretty liberal, and their kids weren't being brought up in that way either, so they didn't really care for that. So they said, no, we need to go. We need to do something different. And it's right about that time that America, the colonies, start, and that's where we're going to get into. Just bear with me here. Now, see that black? That black cone there on the left? That black cone there on the left at about 1616 or 1617, there was a mass die-off of the natives in northeast New England. Where the Pilgrims were about to go, which they did not even know yet. Well, it was in the works, but they didn't even know they could get there or where they were going. In fact, they were headed for Virginia. They weren't headed for Plymouth. They were headed for Virginia because they had to have an okay by the king. We're going to go help with the colonies and all this other stuff. And so, okay, yeah, to go over there. And so, you know, the Virginia colonies were started already by then. By the time they got there, the Virginia colonies was already started. And we're going to get into that. But it was very, very, very rough start. And for very, very different reasons. So God said, I don't want you going to Virginia.